Hello, my good man.
Welcome, everyone. It's time for On the Couch with Sick and Bloom.
A lot of crazy things.
Looking at fantasy football from a deeper place.
This is going to be a changing day in your life.
And now here's your host, Sick and Bloom.
But I would not phone my mother.
Who is going to be this year's surprise league winner? That and more this week on the couch. Bob Harris. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Not Cyber Monday and Black Friday, but it's the time when fantasy football championships are going to be decided. And there's always someone, Bob. There's always somebody that we never could have contemplated. Any names, anybody that you're keeping an eye on, because by the time we get to the end of the season, they might matter.
A couple things. First, I brought us a pair of sneakers to fight over if you want to do the Black Friday
okay.
thing.
Yes.
also, you know, this season, you know, has been super volatile, right? So this, you know, the predicting of the future has been as difficult as any season I can remember. And I, you know, we always say that in the moment of a season, oh, the most injuries ever and the most this ever and the worst that ever. And then, you know, you look back after the season and reflect it. Oh, no, it wasn't, not really. But really, the volatility has been insane. So as I pondered the potential league winners, you know, back in the day when I was a young kid playing the drums, you know, and you're in cover bands and you got to do the covers, right? You would like some songs you couldn't quite do. You just kind of cheese out. You just kind of half-ass it and get, and do the best you can. and so I didn't want to do that with this, but I think, you know, there are so many bad offenses where the opportunities seem to be arising. Right. And so I don't want to go there. I'm going to go with, I sat here and made myself an argument that you could say it's Kenneth Walker already, right? The guy who's going to win this. And so I didn't want to cheese out that much to go back to my old drumming days. So what I'm going to do is go with kind of halfway cheesy. And I'm going to go with Gus Edwards. I wanted someone on a good offense who maybe wasn't drafted, but if you did draft him, it was fairly late. And I'll say the same for Kenneth Walker III, right? I can remember drafting him in the 9th, 10th round, depending on, you know, about the same time as actually, you know, Rashad Penny was going. So, you know, they're both pretty good values. And if you got the right one, you're very happy. But I'm going to go with Gus Edwards because I think going forward, this is a good offense, can be a better offense. Hoping Ronnie Stanley, I'm rooting for you, man.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got a great component in Lamar Jackson that poses all kinds of threats to people. And also, when we see Gus Edwards healthy and running well, he is doing a great job. That 5+ per carry career average is fantastic. The scoring equity is there. I think he may be the guy that gets the job done. And it would be easy to go with, you know, the Jeff Wilson Juniors, but, you know, after last week against the best matchup on planet Earth, he did not cash in. But also part of his issue is, I think, Sig, just there's so many good pieces in that offense, and it's going to make it hard for him to consistently be productive.
Yeah, I'd like that you touched on that the offense is important, right? Because look, Latavius Murray has got the Denver backfield all to himself. Do we really want to play him? Do we even want to play him? So and there's value there. I mean, I got to give a tip of the cap to Cecil, because whenever Javonte Williams went down, Cecil said, I wouldn't have been surprised if Melvin Gordon was released if Williams hadn't gone down, because Gordon had fumbled again in that game. And they picked up Latavius Murray later that week, and he said, Murray's the back you actually want. And it is Murray. But really, the back you actually want is on another team. And I like that you drill down a situation. And with Gus Edwards, I will say this for Gus Edwards. I'll believe it when I see it from J.K. Dobbins. We'll see. He shouldn't be on the waiver wire, though.
No.
He's just too good to be on the waiver wire. But you can see that Gus Edwards is kind of the regulator of this offense, in that when he's on the field, they feel comfortable just doing a bunch of no-nonsense downhill punishing runs. He averages 3, like you said, it was better in the past. I just think the lack of threats in the passing game has made it so easy to compress the field against the Ravens.
Yeah.
So but you're getting you're getting the chances for those cheap rushing touchdowns. Look, they really need to. I love Lamar Jackson's spirit as a team leader, but he doesn't need to be fighting through gang tackles. He doesn't need to be taking the kind of punishment. He doesn't finish his runs like a quarterback. He finishes his runs like everything in the world depends on each run. Go ahead.
Josh Allen, too, by the way.
Yeah.
Cut that out, Josh. You don't have to, like, even when the elbow is bad, like, there's a play where he's reaching out with that hurt arm trying to do something. But you know, one of the things about Edwards, and you mentioned J.K. Dobbins, I've been following this one fairly closely. And a couple of weeks ago, heading into the bye, you know, Garrett Downing and Ryan Mink from the team's website were kind of having a little online debate about, you know, how they saw this going out. And that was one thing they all agreed on was that Edwards is going to be the guy once everyone is healthy and back, because it just turns out they can't rely on Dobbins just yet. And they may not be able to this year.
Yeah, that's the thing with that, whatever procedure he had, but he wasn't quite right, and we shouldn't pencil him in to do anything. So penciling in Edwards for 15 to 20 carries a week, Baltimore has a somewhat soft, I mean, their schedule's not that tough. Right. So he should get that chance. He should get a chance for rushing touchdowns. And maybe he had a 2-touchdown game earlier this year, so maybe that's in the cards for him. But because you mentioned situation, I just want to bring up four. Although one situation is not as good as the others. So what we have in fantasy football this week on the waiver wire for running back is there are a lot of options, but there are a lot of options because we don't really know how a lot of these situations are going to play out. Right. So, but it doesn't matter. This is the speech I've been making on all the shows I'm doing this week, Bob. Embrace the chaos, embrace the senselessness of it all. Embrace all of the way that whatever you knew last week, you can just tear it up. The league is moving at a different pace at this time of year. Isn't it funny, Bob, how senseless fantasy football is, that at the time that things are most random most is important. When we have it online, right? Yeah. Go ahead.
You thought, you know, like we're always looking for that level of predictability or for things to what I would say normalize. And, you know, as we talk early in the season every year, I keep running my mantra out there that, you know, September is the new August, right? And October is the new September. Now it just doesn't seem to matter. It's all new every damn week. Yeah. And so some of these things that we're making decisions on, you know, I've been talking about this a lot. We're making decisions without all the information we need to make them. So that being the case, more so I think than ever before, it just feels like to me, again, more than ever, I'm going that way. Maybe after the season, I'll come back and we'll say, well, it wasn't really that bad. But in the moment, it seems horrible. And so, you know, when you're making decisions without all the information you need to make decisions, your hunches matter. And you're out there and you're listening to Sigmund Bloom and you're listening to Bob Harris and you're consuming all kinds of content. And we're all giving you our hunches. Your hunches are as good as ours. Go ahead and feel your hunches. Let us inform you with our hunches. But in the end, you're the one looking in the mirror on Monday morning after you got beaten. So playing our hunches, you know, is great, but playing your hunches, it's easier to beat yourself up because you don't see us on Monday.
Yeah, you're gathering information. If you're still listening to this show and caring about fantasy football in week 13 of the regular season, then you're sick like the rest of us. And it should be you. I've been talking about this a lot this week too, Bob. Get back to the original genesis of fantasy football. I want to run a team. I want to make the decision. Right. And they're going to win or lose based on what I say. Right. That's what fantasy football is all about. So make it about what you say. And that includes who you trust. I mean, even the people that run teams have to listen to other people and delegate. Yep. So that's fine. But embrace the volatility and chaos. And like you said, hunches are important. So have a hunch, have a position. And the position might be, you know, a perfectly reasonable position for the waiver wire this week. And for running backs is just bid a couple of units on everybody and let the field decide who you get, so that you have more ammo, assuming your waiver wire continues to run for a couple more weeks. So you just don't spend very much, because the lack of clarity means that anybody who spends more than like 5 units on a running back this week might be overspending, because it's all speculative. But out of this speculative miasma will come somebody, right? Somebody. And it is because of the situations. And I wanted to highlight this when I came up with the whole surprise league winners thumbnail for the YouTube browsing window shopping audience, that you have these situations that are uncertain. The player that I probably want to highlight the most is Myles Gaskin. That's why I put on the thumbnail. And the reason I want to highlight Myles Gaskin is this. We already know Raheem Mostert's hurt, and he's hurt. He tends to stay hurt. We already know that Jeff Wilson isn't known for staying healthy, and he had to be dragged off the field. It's cramps. That's okay.
It's okay.
But
Miami.
It's not a big deal. But at the same time, it reminds us that now, who's behind Jeff Wilson? I might want to know. And it is Myles Gaskin, not Salvin Ahmed, who I don't even think got a touch last week whenever Wilson went out. And we already saw Bob in a much less imposing Miami offense when Myles Gaskin was just the guy. He was a wonderful fantasy running back. I think in the fantasy playoffs, he came through big time when we weren't expecting him to. But the Miami situation, it could become Ahmed. It could be someone who's not on the roster right now. The Jets. What I'm going to do, Bob, is I'm going to just touch on these situations, and then you can tell me any hunches or even lack of a hunch. Go ahead.
Right. I mean, you know, the starting point, Miami, we can see what that offense does, and I'm sure we'll get to San Francisco with the same note because it's basically the same scheme where whoever's running the football is set up for some success.
Yeah.
There are great pieces around them. They have innovative play callers who know how to put the team in good position to succeed from play to play, right? Like within a series, they can set people up for success. And we've seen it over and over again, especially with Kyle Shanahan. But, you know, I think Mike McDaniel is heading right down that same path.
Yes.
And that's what you're looking for, right? That's where the hunch should start is, okay, here's an offense that does this.
Right.
Who might be the next guy that does that part of this offense? And so you're exactly right with Gaskin. And I'm guessing, you know, the San Francisco pieces, the Jets, the Jets pieces, this one's going to be interesting. Cause again, I don't know enough about why James Robinson sat out. Was a healthy scratch. Right. Was it a special teams thing? Or is it possible that like they've said, okay, you know, great fast start there in Jacksonville. Looked like that Achilles was all good, but maybe it's not all good. And he's dialed back a little bit. So I'll be scouring for more on that. So until then, I think it's fair to toss some darts at the remaining pieces.
Yeah, I think so too. And the picture you described at Miami is just the Shanahan offense. This is what we always know about the Shanahan offense, right? The production is inevitable. It's just who's going to get the production,
right?
Because it's created by the offense, not the running back. The running back can add, like a Clinton Portis, the running back can add to the production that's already there, but any competent running back can harvest the production that's there. And this Miami offense, obviously, defenses.
And there's room for more than one.
Yes.
Right? This seems to be more of a thing this year than ever. I think whether it's me finally embracing after 1980s Bob Harris, it was ingrained that you have to have a true feature back. The NFL doesn't play that game anymore for the most part. There are some, and it's great to have them, but we're finding out that the teams can play multiple running backs and it doesn't necessarily devastate the fantasy value of either of the running backs.
No,
you know, take into account the Christian McCaffrey, Elijah Mitchell split that we saw that worked pretty well, but also, you know, and again, this is Shanahan related. We can go back to Atlanta in 2015, 2016. When you had Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman tearing up the league and both of them making hay and both of them being, you know, viable fantasy, frontline fantasy options in Freeman's case. And Coleman was, you know, making big plays because he was set up for great success by the rest of the offense. So I think this is something we're going to have to, you know, come to grips with, or, you know, I'm coming to grips with as an old timer. Right. But I think, you know, if you're just getting into this or something, this should be the norm. You should embrace situations where there are multiple running backs, and it's more about setting your expectations than it is, being upset. You know, set proper expectations for what you might get out of these players.
Yes, yes. In fact, Bob, if we're going to get right down to it on this tangent, I wonder if this is the year. And I'm not saying it's not going to change back. Okay, I'm not saying that we won't revisit this because we always revisit everything in fantasy football, in life. But is this the year that everybody just collectively waves the white flag to zero running back, do the opposite upside down drafting, and says,
yes,
you're right. Don't use a first or second round pick on a running back. I mean, right. Austin Eckler seems like he's going to be okay. Saquon Barkley's wearing down. I think Derrick Henry's wearing down. Christian McCaffrey
leave
has
him alone.
Any irritation.
None of that slander. Yeah. None of the Henry slander.
You get it. You get it. I get it. You know. I mean, and even before who are the running backs that are actually tilting leagues, like Breece Hall was until he got hurt. Travis Etienne was, and we'll see about him.
Right. There's Kenneth another Walker. Situation that we're going
right.
to
so,
exploit.
You know, so, and who are the mainstays, Bob? Who are the players that we're thinking, yep, I'm in it because I took Stephon Diggs in the first round, because I took Justin Jefferson in the first round, because I took Travis Kelce, right? Even Cooper Kupp before he got hurt, transcending that terrible situation. Travis Kelce, absolutely.
It's easier to find leverage over the field at other positions than it is at running back. And quarterback, even like I'm thinking, you know, the trend has been, you know, the quarterbacks have been edging up, then they've started edging back down. I think you're going to see them rising back up because there's surer things, right? You know, week to week.
Yes.
And there's something to be said for that certainty. look, we're drafting everyone we're drafting in the first round, we're drafting at their ceiling, right? Yes. So there's going to be disappointments. And, you know, see, the question is, why would you draft that guy in the first round if you don't think he's good? Well, because you have to. You're not going to get him anywhere else. And the other players, that's the whole idea behind value, right, is finding players at the right price. So I'm kind of getting past the notion, the feeling that I'm getting disappointed by first round picks. I'm, you know, just I'm drafting guys at their ceiling. They don't always hit the ceiling, right?
Right.
And so, you know, being able to deal with that and building your roster accordingly, this is always the key, right? The overall roster build. You're looking at your top guy. If you think that first pick is the guy that's going to win your league, you're probably not going to win your league. You got to build the rest of your roster up.
Yeah. You're not gonna profit on your first round pick, probably. You just want to break even on your first round pick. You don't want to lose on your first round pick. And it really does mirror football in a way, Bob, because what happens is if everybody's thinking this, and my Lord, with the proliferation of good fantasy football information, there's not really a lot of time to take advantage of gaps, right? Everybody's immediately caught up. So everybody's going to take those wide receivers, right? Push them up the board. So now you're going to be, it's a copycat league, but if everybody copies, now maybe the contrarian view eventually becomes smarter. So yeah, I mean, if we're getting Austin Eckler, et cetera, pushed into the second round of drafts, when you're like, well, I'm not gonna pass on that. So we'll see how it all plays out. But certainly the way this season experientially has gone, you are probably thinking, I'm not taking a running back in the first round this year, next probably, year. And for quarterback, if you were on the outside of that Hurts, Allen group, Mahomes, Hurts, Allen, Mahomes, and, you know, Joe Burrow's doing some stuff. And there's been a few success stories like Geno Smith and Justin Herbert's coming on and so on. Right. But really, there's a lot more people out in the cold. There's a lot of plans at quarterback. They're like, I can wait and get Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers or Matthew Stafford or Trey Lance, even Justin Fields, who's coming through. You don't even know what you have there. So there's a lot of people out in the cold at quarterback. And I do think you're right that that's going to push up your Mahomes, Allen, as it should.
Yeah.
In VBD terms, what's up, Joe Bryant, the inventor of VBD? In VBD terms, those quarterbacks should be first-round picks. If someone comes to me next year, Bob, and says, I'm taking Josh Allen in the first round, I'm taking Jalen Hurts in the first round, I'm taking Patrick Mahomes in the first round, I'm taking, good for you. Good for you, because actually the numbers would show that it's a smart move. This year, they're worth first-round picks. I don't know why it would change that significantly next year. Let's get back to these specific running back situations real quick. And there is even a Shanahan connection to the Jets backfield, right? There's the Tevin Coleman, 3-6 degrees of Tevin Coleman, right? so the important thing is not so much you got to nail it with your hunch, but be ready to move laterally as soon as we see something potentially is different. And I think with the San Francisco situation, who knows? Right. Because Tyrion Davis Price, they like enough to spend a third round pick. They like Trey Sermon enough to spend a third round pick. But they liked him enough to do that. He did make the team. There was some question, but he doesn't contribute on special teams, so he was a healthy scratch. Jordan Mason, who they seemed very reluctant to use as a runner, but keep him up because the special teams look pretty good as a runner. They even mentioned that he ran well against stack boxes. When all they were doing was trying to stop the run to get the ball back, Mason ran well. But then there's Tevin Coleman. And Tevin Coleman's the old hand who knows the offense in and out and was productive this year when called on. So who to put a chip on? I don't know. I feel like Mason's got a little bit of momentum, and Tevin Coleman is an eternal disappointment in fantasy since that original year you were talking about.
Right, 2016.
But it could be Coleman, because the San Francisco's offense is good enough to, again, just produce by default. It could be Davis Price. Jets, got to talk about the Jets. Like you said,
by the way, put the San Francisco connection there for the, you know, Mike LaFleur.
Exactly.
Running the offense. So we have the connection there. And Robert Saleh, of course.
Absolutely. So you have not one, not two, not three, but four running backs we need to track for the Jets. Don't drop Michael Carter. It's only a little ankle sprain. He's the lead back, not a true bell cow, but he's the lead back. This is a productive offense. We saw how productive they were with Mike White out there. Then you have Ty Johnson, who's the incumbent back in terms of, you know, again, the system. He has that experience, and he was running behind Zonovan Knight, undrafted free agent rookie, last week. Knight looked good. And Knight was probably better in the passing game. But Johnson comes in the second half and busts off this 32-yard touchdown run. And Johnson actually looks like the live back here. But then there's James Robinson. Who knows why he was a healthy scratch? It wouldn't be shocking to see him play a role or even be important for fantasy.
Or even be a lead role if there's no Michael Carter this week. Right. The range of possible outcomes seems pretty open here.
But we know that this offense can support two fantasy relevant running backs. We know that already. And we've seen it with Mike White, especially. He likes to throw the running backs. So keep your head on a swivel there. The last one I'll mention is Las Vegas. We got to mention Las Vegas, right? So the problem here, Bob, and this is something where I can, you have even more years than I do following this stuff. When you look at Justin Fields, when you look at Josh Jacobs, right? When you look at anybody on the Rams, when you look at these injured cornerstone type players on these teams that are going nowhere this year, Travis Etienne, don't you have more heavily weight the side of they're going to get shut down at some point?
Yeah. So, I mean, with Jacobs, I you know, Fields, I hope they do. I mean, you know, I'd like
to see right him, for his own sake, right. To preserve his earning potential.
You know, that team has given up what 40 plus sacks, right? So, I mean, you know, and not all of them, the offensive line's fault, by the way, Justin Fields, some of it's your fault, young man, but, you know, either way, I mean, I don't know that he needs to be taking a bunch of brutal hits down the stretch run of this season, but you know, well, that'll all get shaken out. Jacobs, I think, you know, we came into the season, and I can remember me and Dempsey talking about this a lot, Mike Dempsey on the Football Diehards program. And just, you know, it's going to be one of two outcomes here. Either they look at Josh Jacobs as a rental car and they drive the wheels off, and they're trying to, and the wheels are remaining on, and he's rolling in fine fashion. Good for him. He's earning himself a lot of money wherever he ends up next year. But the other possible outcome was that the New England Patriots folks, Dave Ziegler and Josh McDaniels, come in and do New England Patriots-y things, like, you know, a committee running back, which is the majority of what we've seen over the course of time with Josh McDaniels as play caller, but not all the time, and not necessarily in Denver when he was a coach there. So, you know, I mean, I think he's open to things, but if there was no Josh Jacobs, I'm guessing we're seeing a committee, right? And so then you've got to figure out the values of those pieces. And it's a committee until somebody makes it not a committee. And maybe Zamir White can do that. I don't think so. I think it'd be, you know, him, Abdullah, and, you know, you can't rule out Brandon Bolden just given his history with McDaniel. So that's another one where you're just kind of you're putting your chips down and kind of a little bit of hope is not the best strategy, people. I'm going to just go ahead and acknowledge that right
hope
now.
Hope is not a strategy.
Before I hear that. But I mean, some of this is, again, you know, the uncertainty going forward. You want a piece of this if those things come to fruition. And Travis Etienne is an interesting one, you know, not the least of which because Daryl Henderson shows up there who, like, maybe he's the league winner if something happens to Travis Etienne. I thought about this, and it's just, you know, I don't want to project something has happened to Travis Etienne and make everyone who has Travis Etienne all nervous, because I do think he was cleared to go back in that game Sunday, and he just and probably discretion the better part of valor in this case. Check it out. Make sure it's all good. It's the same foot. So I get all that. And, you know, but what if it is worse? I mean, you know, there's pieces. I don't think Jermichael Hasty would be the lead answer going forward. Also, though, Doug Peterson, while you're throwing the ball to Michael Hasty, let me remind you that Travis Etienne can do that as well, sir.
Yes, right? It's so strange. It's so strange how these things go, right? Like Christian McCaffrey gets traded and then the Panthers commit to the run, things like that. It's better late than never, I guess. So we're going to be watching this. Travis Etienne, Josh Jacobs, Aaron Rodgers, someone mentioned in the chat room. Like all these players on teams that are not going to make the playoffs, at what point does the team say that's enough? They throw in the towel and say that's enough for this year.
By the way, why didn't I come up with Deonta Foreman as the league winner? I mean, you know, I don't know that it's a good enough offense is probably why.
Right.
You know, it just like, why is it Damian Pierce? Well, you know, he's going to, you know, I love volume, but.
Do you even play Damian Pierce at this point?
You can't even play Damian Pierce right now until we see something from this offense suggesting, you know, and it's possible given his workload in college, which was never that robust, that he's, you know, the proverbial rookie wall has smashed into him. More likely it is the opposing lineman smashing into him because his line does not block well. And there's no other offense there and everyone knows it. So, but Deonta Foreman, look, this is the second year he's, you know, come out of nowhere, so to speak. I mean, he didn't come out of nowhere this year. He was a well-paid free agent. But the, you know, Christian McCaffrey's departure kind of opens that door and he has slammed it shut on Chuba Hubbard, I would say.
Yes.
And honestly, what else do the Panthers have to do? I mean, look, Sam Darnold came in and did exactly what he needed to do. He did not turn the ball over. He did not make mistakes. He got it to DJ Moore, and he handed it off nicely to Deonta Foreman. That is your job, Sam Darnold, for the rest of the year.
Yep.
Do that, and you will keep that job. And so, you know, so maybe Deonta Foreman is the guy. I just don't think there's enough offense there for him to qualify, or potential offense there for him to qualify as a guy that will win you a league, unless you're getting points for per carry.
Yeah, points for running tacklers over. That's great. You love to see that story for Foreman because it keeps the Achilles story alive. And then, you know, these guys, it's easy for us to forget this. I mean, we do so much of this that just reduces us down to numbers and how did my fantasy team do and what should you do and things like that. But these guys are playing for their livelihood. And Dante Foreman, you tear your Achilles as a running back, like that's probably the end of the line for you. And no. And so it's good to see. Not a league winner because, that, like you said, Carolina offense is so limited. And when they're not playing another team that's miserable on offense, eventually they have to go away from the run. They're on bye this week, so that's great too.
I think he's in the same boat as Latavius Murray, who, man, great credit to Latavius Murray, who has like shown up on what, 3 different teams now. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, wherever he shows up, he just comes in and does the job, sometimes on a damn moment's notice. So all credit to him.
Yeah.
He is what he is.
Well, and the Carolina, by the way, they've still got Detroit, Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
They still have Seattle and Tampa Bay.
How about Pittsburgh, Sig? I mean, you've got, I mean, Najee Harris, I mean, as soon as you hear the abdominal issue, we don't know, you know, what all that's going to entail, right? And then we have Jaylen Warren with the hamstring issue. Don't know what his timetable is. Seems, you know, I don't think he practiced at all last week. So that kind of leaves us a little bit in the dark there. So here we stand. Benny Snell and Anthony McFarland waiting for us.
And because the Steelers offense is just, you know, a limiting factor.
Why does everybody not named Najee Harris run better than Najee Harris there, though?
I mean, maybe it's, again, Najee Harris comes into the year. We find out a little after the fact with some foot issue. Yes. He's got like something in his shoe, like an orthotic or something for his foot. That doesn't sound right. That sounds like, well, we're not going to shut you down. Let's try to see what we can get out of you this year and see what you can do. So, but it's the Steelers offense. Like you said, there's too many moving parts there. Benny Snell showing signs of life, but they wanted it to be Anthony McFarland. But Jaylen Warren actually is the one that looked good, but he's got a hamstring. And it's the Steelers. They do play Atlanta this week. So we'll see. What this stuff underscores again is the chaos that's coming and the way that teams' logic about choices they're going to make is changing, and it's going to be unpredictable, and they may even like double back on themselves and 1 week show us one thing and then change their mind with these backs. So just keep your head on a swivel, stay agile. Okay, we'll turn the page from all these backfields. It's funny too, because somebody reacted correctly. They're like, so you're telling me there's a bunch of running backs on the waiver wire that score anywhere from 1 to 15 points this week? Yes, that's what I'm telling you. Every week. I'm also telling you Deshaun Watson's going to be back this week at Houston. There's the schedule makers first. So when we write the fantasy football story of 2022, Bob, will there even be a Deshaun Watson footnote? Will it be important that you remembered he was going to come back, that you stayed with your Browns players because they're going to finish with a kick because he's out there, or is it going to be disappointing? Or what's your crystal ball have for Deshaun Watson and the Browns?
So we have not seen Deshaun Watson for quite some time. I don't believe he's played football for 700 some days. But last time we saw him, he was very good. Just like seeing a news blurb of, coming in my phone about Tevin Coleman's possible big role with the 49ers, by the way, as we're sitting here wrapping that portion of the program up. I'm really torn on this because he didn't look great in the preseason. I wouldn't expect him to. Yeah. But he comes in, you know, not cold. The reports we've had from Cleveland, everybody involved says he looks great. I don't know what else they would say publicly, but you haven't heard any, you know, buzz under the, you know, radar kind of chatter that he has not looked good. He's looked great by all accounts, including Amari Cooper, has made some pretty public statements about it as well as other teammates. I think this is, you know, Jacoby Brissett has played really well, and I think we're all pretty happy with what we've gotten, especially if you invested in Amari Cooper, because you got him at a huge discount based on the fear of not having a quarterback. Turns out he had one, and although his name was Jacoby Myers, look, we do this as fantasy managers, right? It's, you know, goes back to being a caveman, that whatever's waiting outside the door, if it's a mouse, you blow it up to be a saber-toothed tiger, so when you walk out, you're ready for it. We do the same thing when we're drafting our players in fantasy, right? Oh, he's got no quarterback. Look where DK Metcalf was going. He has no quarterback. Ah,
DJ Moore has no quarterback, though.
That's fair point. Point taken. But for the most part, they are going to have a quarterback. So these guys had a quarterback. Jacoby Brissett was serviceable. Is Jacoby Brissett ever going to be, you know, compared, you know, when we look at them after their careers to Watson? I don't think so, just in terms of on-the-field work. So, I mean, I'm optimistic and encouraged, especially for pieces like Donovan Peoples-Jones, who, you know, was coming on anyway. Is that a matter of chemistry? We heard there was some chemistry with him and Watson, though, this summer, and I'm hoping they can build on it. So I'm hopeful. I'll be honest. I didn't invest a ton in Deshaun Watson, you know, and just want useful players on my roster for the most part. But there were a couple of leagues like the Scott Fish Bowl, which will get me nowhere because I got ousted already. But I'm gonna throw him in some lineups there and hope for the best. I mean, we've seen him. He's, you know, again, last time we saw him play, I think he threw for 5,000 yards, right? So it's not like he's chopped liver.
No, and we'll see how he adjusts to this different offense and different teammates. But I think you're right to say Jacoby Brissett exceeding expectations is still a baseline that Deshaun Watson can outperform when he knocks off the rust. The one thing that I keep coming back to is the weather. And I'm going to ask you a little bit more about that. But, you know, he did say he didn't want to play, or Mary Kay Cabot said that he did not want to play for a cold weather team. And that's why she originally thought he wasn't going to go to Cleveland. But, you know, then there was a whole other cycle. And they play at Cincinnati, home against after this week against Houston, at Cincinnati, home against Baltimore, home against the Saints, at Washington. They close out at Pittsburgh. So we'll see. Because he played at Clemson, you know,
parkas and gloves aren't a big deal when you got a $250 million guarantee.
That's true. It's a parka lined with cash. But it should be a boost. Like you said, all these guys are coming on right now. Nick Chubb, Amari Cooper, Donovan Peoples-Jones, and it wasn't great last week. David Njoku. Man, if Cleveland was a playoff contender, that would have been a play we are still talking about today on 4th and 10 to save the game and to beat Tom Brady. That's always sweet. But I want to ask you, because I was looking at the waiver wire mess at quarterback this week, and at least in those shallow leagues where people are only carrying one quarterback, there might potentially be out there Ryan Tannehill and Trevor Lawrence. Of course, Mike White, I'm sure, is out there. You know, I was trying to rank these guys against each other for people, guiding them as we do. Jared Goff, Trevor Lawrence might be out there, you know. And then one of the things I decided to wait just to create some separation, because you can tell a good story for any of them, is the schedule. And specifically, are they playing in cold weather games? You've been doing this for a long time, Bob. How consequential is weather at this most important time of the fantasy football season?
Much like I'm injury agnostic going into seasons, I'm weather agnostic during the season. It turns out football is a winter sport. It's often played in inclement weather. You'll be surprised to learn over the course of its history, many points have been scored in less than ideal conditions. So I want to go back, I want to say it was like 2015, 2016, somewhere where I was at the in Vegas for the big FanDuel Fandango. The crown champion Travis Spieth won that year, and he had a number of players in the Philadelphia Detroit game that was played in about a foot and a half of snow, right? And here he was winning $1 million. So, you know, like when I'm looking at these things, you know, just like injuries and things like that, it's more of hair splitters. Like if I have two guys that are within the same range, you know, and if I look at them in the same tier and I say, okay, well, I'm gonna play the one who's playing in the beautiful sunshine and without any wind or wet stuff, and if it's like deciding between, you know, DeAndre Hopkins and Greg Dortch, I'm probably going to play Hopkins even if he's playing the snow as opposed to Dortch. Well, maybe Dortch is a bad example, but you get the point.
Yeah,
is I'm kind of using it to, you know, in that way. Like, I mean, obviously, ideal, you know, weather is ideal. You'll be surprised to learn, but you know, football is a winter sport, and you should be prepared, and players are prepared to play in it. And again, this is another situation where we tend to, blow up the dangers and everything in our mind, and I'm not playing that guy, he's playing in the damn rain this week. Oh no.
Right.
Well, no, they play in the rain and they can play pretty well.
Yeah, psychologically, the hard part about this is that you will remember the player that you left in who was a dud because of weather for a long time more than you'll remember the player that you benched who went off. Depending on what the other player did, right? If the other player did something, you might not remember that, because it feels like you should see it coming. The other good news is that, man, there's a lot of nuance. Chris Allen on our staff and a lot of other staffs, among others, doing really great work about weather impact on football. Bob, down to the point where I think it was somebody, what was his name? I can't remember now, from AccuWeather, who I had on my show a few years back. Because they were doing
I've had that guy.
Brian Thompson, maybe, is that his name?
I had Chris on my show Saturday night. We were discussing some of these things as well.
And the level of nuance now, Bob, is how is the stadium oriented on like a north, south, east, west axis? And then what direction is the weather? And based even on the design of the stadium, are we going to get a crosswind? Are we going to get a swirling wind? Are we just going to get a headwind and a tailwind? And like you said, football players are fine with headwind and tailwind. Quarterbacks are fine with that.
Right.
And then and then so on and so forth. So they can even analyze and say, like, well, in this stadium, with the wind coming in at this direction, it actually won't be something that's unpredictable or difficult for the players to go with. So we'll see.
You start hearing things like, you know, gusts 50 miles an hour. You're going, oh, that's probably not great. You know, right, I mean, but it, when it's a steady wind and it's 20, 25, I mean, quarterbacks have very strong arms. Yeah. And if it's not tricky wins, and then that is good to get into nuance. And again, it's great for hair splitting, but, you know, you're not going to be benching, you know,
exactly
Jalen Hurts for, you know, Kyle Allen. Don't do that.
Yeah. Yes. So it is, like you said, I mean, I try to release my rankings in tiers also, in addition to just the data point of the projections, and you don't bump down tiers. Maybe within a tier, you break a tie within a tier based on weather, but you don't necessarily talk yourself out of it. It is a saber-tooth tiger though.
Bottom. It is.
It is actually a saber-tooth tiger. Here, see, we should really just go off the rails right here. And what fear is the mind? Fear is the mind killer, right? That fear, that fear, like so many times, the mask, when you pull off the mask, is just fear. It was just us the whole time under the bed or in the closet.
Almost always.
Always. Always.
We are the monsters of Maple Street.
Yes, that's why we tell stories about vampires and werewolves. It's us. It's all the time. It's just a description of us when we get carried away and go too far. But before we get carried away and go too far off the rails, I guess. I'm trying to think of other good topics. I mean, I'll ask you this one, embracing the chaos. Anybody, Bob, if someone says, throw me a life preserver at tight end, you know, I need something, anything. This was the most depressing week on the waiver wire tight end, but maybe we'll look back in a couple of weeks, Bob, and some of the names I had on the waiver wire won't be so depressing. Names like, oh, Josh Oliver and Jelani Woods and Jordan Akins, even Tyler Conklin and of course Hunter Henry, maybe, I don't know, or maybe some other name, or just otherwise say it's pointless. There's not going to be any cavalry arriving. If somebody said my team is good, I just need to figure out tight end, is there any dart you want to throw?
The lesson learned here is no position is leverage over the field more important than a tight end. And all our talk is, if I don't get one of the top guys, I'll just stream. Well, you and everybody else in your league that didn't get one of those top two guys, and you're all going to be fighting over the same table scraps every week and not always successfully. It's a tricky world. And I saw in the comments, someone mentioned Daniel Bellinger, who I thought, I actually had drafted in a couple of leagues. I acknowledged him as I had like a special tight end heavy league. Everything, but you know, based on what I'd heard about him in June and July from some of the local beat writers, who said this is going to be the guy, and so, but I mean, playing those, you know, and again, that was a little bit hunchy as well. But I think beyond that, you know, playing the week to week dart tosses based on matchups, is not a good. That's like almost like hope being a strategy. That is almost not a strategy. It's just like spinning the wheel and hoping you hit the right guy at the right time is going to be a tough call. So I do think there's, you know, and I say that there are some guys that I feel like have become reliable. You know, maybe we lost one in Cole Kmet. I don't know what he'll be with the quarterback situation, but he had become fairly reliable and maybe a guy that I know some people were on him pretty heavily in advance of the season. I was not one of those people, but I mean, we've lost Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz. That hurts. So maybe now the Pat Freiermuth, you know, rises up into that top five. I think George Kittle's going to remain there. David Njoku's going to be in that list. Hayden Hurst is a reliable piece of that offense in Cincinnati. He just is. I don't know if Juwan Johnson is reliable, but, you know, more so than a handful of other guys with the higher profiles. But, I mean, Dalton Schultz seems like he's come back on now and he's kind of hit his groove. But the problem is, according to their touchdown celebrations, they have a bunch of tight ends. And some of them will actually leap right over people on the field, said Jake Ferguson. So, yeah, tight end is a tricky damn position this year. And I mean, I think, you know, there's no shortage of guys you can, you know, cap any given week. And also that means there's no shortage of guys who might disappoint you. I can remember a couple of weeks ago and I thought Greg Dulcich was it. He was going to be the league winning tight end. And then it came to, you know, which informed part of today's discussion where, oh yeah, they've probably helps that they're on a good offense. Right. And he's just not, he seems like an ideal piece. If that offense worked, he seems like he'd be in an ideal spot to split the seam and do great things. But it's not a good offense and he can't do that. So, and like if you mentioned Josh Oliver, I think, you know, anybody in that Ravens offense in the receiving core, not named Mark Andrews, you're taking a chance with, I think, at this point. I mean, it might be DeMarcus Robinson, you know, rises up and becomes the thing that you could play. But I think once Rashad Bateman was gone, it just narrowed down to a one-man field. And one other guy each week is going to show up. And good luck figuring out who it is.
It's true. The one thing I'll watch with Oliver other than him going back to Jacksonville and the revenge game narrative.
The revenge game was obvious.
Isaiah Likely was out. Mm-hmm. So this
and Kolar was inactive. There was hints.
So there's consolidation of tight end targets that aren't going to Mark Andrews. And the other thing to remember about Josh Oliver is Mark Andrews has been on the injury list a lot of the season, like he usually is. And well, you never know if he's going to miss time. Isaiah Likely is also not healthy. This is a tight end centric offense. So I can tell a story about him, Bob, and I can tell a story about Jordan Akins. Jordan Akins has actually been about half the time a solid play. Jordan Akins has actually been like fringe startable fantasy tight end this year already, even though a lot of people don't know because he wasn't on the team to start the season. And when Kyle Allen was throwing against garbage time defenses, he looked to Jordan Akins. So, you know, that's what Texans games are going to look like for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think Brandon Jordan's been a healthy scratch like the last couple of weeks, I want to say.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with him.
And yeah, it tells you something.
It's Tegan Quatoriano. That's the other
Quentin
guy.
Tarantino. When did he start playing football?
Right. God of the video store. And I know you're at the reason that Greg Dulcich disappointed you, Bob, is because you're just jealous of his hair. It's okay. I am too. That's why I wear hats so people can't see.
he does have a nice head of hair.
The heir to Troy Polamalu. I guess, Bob, because this is the last time we'll get to visit during the regular season, before we go off the rails, I'll ask you this. When you look back at how your teams are doing, you look back at your drafts and you think about the teams that you're proud of or the teams that maybe you want to forget, who have been some of the starring players in roles in the story of your teams, good and bad?
My eagerness to lock in drafts where I, you know, did the smart move and drafted Kelce and Devontae Adams. You know,
Kelce Adams.
Yeah, the boring old guy, right? And I think that's the thing that, you know, there, and I want to say, you know, some of the running backs that I invested in, you know, I thought were, you know, have been on good trajectories, and some that I missed on are now starting to, you know, Saquon Barkley is a guy I totally just, I didn't see it, right? And you and I probably talked about this at some point, you know, the Giants offense, it was going to be better, right? Because how could it not be better? It's a super low bar. But was it going to be, you know, incrementally better? And was Saquon Barkley going to turn him back into that explosive threat that he did? I didn't think the latter was going to come true. It has up to this point, well, up to two games ago, right? So I'm wondering if, you know, that's not slowing down. It doesn't help having a bunch of offensive linemen hurt. And I guess looking back to every year I say this, I need to pay more attention to offensive lines. And every year I pay less attention than I should, or I feel like after the season. The Rams feel the same way, by the way. Offensive line. But quarterbacks, you know, seem to be the consistent plays. You know, that's some of the lessons I'm going to come away with, or be more willing to draft quarterbacks higher. I felt like I kind of dialed back on that, and it can still work. Justin Fields will tell you that it can still work. There's plenty of guys who have come through that you didn't have to draft highly, but just having that position, you don't have to worry about. So when you land a Josh Allen, a Travis Kelce, you know, one of the top ends, a Cooper Kupp, you know, prior to the injury. I know everyone's, you know, oh, these guys get hurt. They all get hurt. You know, I said this going into the season. If you looked at the final, you know, for round one ADP, 8 of those 12 players had missed significant time due to injuries. And the ones who hadn't were heading into their second year mostly, or third year, I think at the best. And some of those now have missed time, Najee Harris, Jonathan Taylor. So everyone in football gets hurt. So quit using that as, you know, the determination of whether you're going to draft a player or not. I get it. You know, it's scary and it happens a lot. And you're going to kick yourself in the tail when they get hurt again. Say, I knew it. No, you didn't know it. I mean, you don't know it until it happens. So the big takeaways are get those solid anchor plays, get a little leverage over the field at a couple positions, then take your chances at running back.
Yeah, you mentioned Kelce and Adams, and I've toyed with 1 year, Bob, writing an article and drafting some teams on the strategy of only take players that are on the upslope side of their career, or at least at the peak of their career arc, and just don't take any players that aren't on that upslope side of their career arc. But then you miss out on a Kelce. You miss out. You're looking at Kyle Pitts, right? You're looking at more of those options than you are looking at Travis Kelce. You're looking at other wide receivers more than you're looking at Devontae Adams. And I think it's going to, again, be that there's no rule of thumb. There's nothing, like we talk about the quarterbacks. What about wide receivers don't have a quarterback? Well, if you didn't take DJ Moore or Darnell Mooney because of that, you were right. And if you didn't take other DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, you were wrong. So we're never going to be able to hang our hat on that. The other thing that I wanted to mention, brought up Saquon Barkley, because the real, I mean, the shark move was taking Saquon Barkley around the 1-2 turn. But the real shark move was taking Saquon Barkley around the 1-2 turn, pocketing like 4 or 5 good weeks so that your team is off to a hot start, and then trading him. And I think that we're going to see that for, I almost think Austin Eckler, maybe. I don't want to jinx him. I don't want to bloom him. But, you know, who at running back is going to have St. Chubb maybe with that extra boost from Deshaun Watson? He was a third round pick. That never should have happened. In hindsight, that was a real, why did we, any of us ever endorse that? Nothing really changed. He overcame bad situations. He was a end of the first, early second round pick, and we were letting him all fall to the third round for whatever reason. Nick Chubb, and just respect Nick Chubb, right? Don't disrespect Nick Chubb.
I go back
That's
to my rookie
away.
Scouting portfolio when he was ranked ahead of Saquon, and people were outraged. And he's a damn good running back.
No, he's the perfect running back for that system. So yeah, I love the note on quarterback, and it's all experiential, Bob. Like part of the reason I think that we think it's a saber-tooth tiger is the one time we opened our door and it was a saber-tooth tiger. We don't want to open our door. Yeah, we don't want to open our door and get surprised again. But I think with quarterback, a lot of people that have looked at their team, I'm hearing from a lot of people, Bob, my team would be fine if I just had a quarterback. I'm getting hammered, I'm getting bludgeoned every week when I'm facing a Hurts or a Mahomes or an Allen, and I'm giving up 10 points. And that's really hard to make up. 10 points is what you give up when you take a zero or you have someone get hurt and have to leave a game early. And you're conceding that to teams that hit on their quarterback pick.
Yeah, so, it's absolutely true. So and this year, like quarterback scoring down a little bit, just a scoring down in general. But you know, the 20-point mark is a pretty good mark anymore.
Yeah, now
and the guys who are getting that are those rushing quarterbacks as well. So that was something that'll be on my list.
Oh my god! Too. If you played Russell Wilson and you got 20 points, you'd fall over with joy. You know, and again, this is one of the quarterbacks that were part of those plans. I can wait a quarterback, no problem. I can wait a quarterback. Well, I can wait until off the rails because. If you don't know Bob Harris, you know Bob Harris. He's one of the OGs on the couch at Football Diehard. Find him at XM a lot because they're smart and they know that Bob's good for business. It was just Thanksgiving, Bob. It's getting to be the winter's holiday season. I guess the first thing I'll ask is, what does it mean to you when you think of Thanksgiving, Christmas holidays, end of the year, winter festivals? What does make it special to Bob Harris?
You know, in this business, every day is work, right? There are no days off. If you think about how I have worked every Thanksgiving and Christmas Day for the last 30 years, and it makes me realize the people around me are amazing, that they even put up with any of this nonsense is remarkable, but that they put up with that particular portion of the nonsense is like, I almost, you know, just imagine, why have they not all just ganged up and killed me at this point? So makes me extra thankful of the people in my life and the people around me for indulging, you know. I mean we are a pain, you know. We sit here and we talk about what a grind it is and everything, but we're doing something we love, right? We're sitting here every day. I get up and I do something and talk about something and write about something that I find infinitely fascinating and I love doing, and that's all I do all day long. It's like I live in my little world doing my little thing, and all the people around me have to adjust and make accommodations to deal with my bizarre love of a hobby. So I'm thankful for all those people. That's what I think about.
Yeah, the people in your life. I did a part of my Thanksgiving speech on our Thanksgiving preview, Bob, about like what you're alluding to, that I always say not only do we get to do something we love as our job, but we get indulged in so much that people pay attention to us. Don't we all need to be seen and heard? And every day people see and hear us and tell us and give us positive feedback. And we get to, we game the system because we made it our job. I'm working. I need quiet. I need peace. But we made that hack. We were foolish enough, Bob, to think that something that was just frittering away free time could turn into an industry. And well, here we are. Things change a lot during your lifetime. But absolutely, it's all the people out there. I know a lot of our audiences are made up of people who don't have as enjoyable a bargain with the world,
right,
in exchange for the right to exist in this society. And we owe a ton of gratitude to them. That's the direction the gratitude should flow, but always gratitude. So go ahead.
I just the audience is the thing that, you know, has carried this over the course of, you know, like I sit here and I think I've been doing this literally 30 years. And I think all along I imagined it, not only that I would do it for the rest of my life, but it would be, I would be, make a great fortune doing it. And all these things, and some of this has come true, but the thing that has carried it along the whole way is that there's a group of like-minded people out there yeah. who enjoy thinking and talking about this. And, you know, if you sit here and you don't pretend that you actually know more than everybody, I might be better informed because I sit here doing it every day, but I'm not a better player than anybody who's in my audience. They're all on top yeah. of things. And mostly I'm preaching to the choir and working to inform them and make them, you know, people, oh, you're a fantasy expert. No, I'm a person. My job is making the people who subscribe to my work experts. Right. And so yeah. I think that's just, you know, being part of a community is a big part of this. And that's the other portion, you know, the people in your personal life are great. Also the people who have supported us, you know, in our work and allowed us to continue doing this for so long. And you're no spring chicken either, Sigmund Bloom.
No, I'm not. You've been doing this for 30 years. I've been doing this professionally for about 16 now. And otherwise, and I do want to say, just in case people don't know, like I want to say, oh, Bob Harris thought of this as something to do before anybody else even thought of it. But no, we are able to think of it because you thought of it, Bob. you are the reason this is on you. But it's in the spirit, in that spirit of community and in that spirit of people coming together. And that's always what fantasy football about, I think, is people staying in touch and staying part of each other's lives. Football is that handshake. Okay, going back to the holidays real quick, though. And I understand if you want to, you know, edit this, but I'm going to do like real on the couch stuff here. Like if you just rid your mind, that's it. Childhood memories of the holidays. What pops into your mind?
Football.
Yeah. Okay, I should have said something. No, that's great though. It's perfect, right? It's why it's part of the story.
I mean, that's the thing here. That you know that me and my dad shared. You know, the something that brought us together over the course of our lives, and the thing that you know many of my friends, as I you know grew up and from childhood into young adulthood, that's the shared experience with my friends, who we would all gather in places and share the football. I mean, it's you know. I mean, beyond that, I don't know. It's been 30 years of football. So, I have to think back to my childhood. You didn't tell me that part,
right? Why? Well, right. I know. No. It's neat to live long enough and start to be able to see, draw a line, like you said, the line in this case leads back through football, but draw a line through those things and see those themes start to emerge. And I mean, it is again. I don't know about you. I have liked getting older, actually. I have found, especially into my 40s, Bob, that even though the world makes less sense, I like to say these days, may you live long enough for the world to become wicked. It seems wicked because you've lived long enough to see it. But everything inside, everything from here inside makes more sense. Mm. And so I don't lament the last year. Go ahead.
I think, you know, as you get older, you become calmer and you assess things a little more, you know, rationally and accept things a little more for how they were. I think, you know, as I left my 50s and jumped into my 60s.
Looking good, Bob.
You finally realize, I think the big lesson, and it applies to fantasy football as well, is you get to control one thing in your life.
Yep.
That's it. That's all. How you react to things, how you act towards other people. All the things that are important to you are all within your control. All the rest of it, like, it's okay. People get to be whatever they want to be. People get to say whatever they want to say. People can, you know, talk bad about you. They can talk great about you. All those things. This is all out of your control. Let it go. Watching games on Sunday, you've set your lineup. You've made logical assessments of situations. And again, the game of football played with an oblong spheroid is designed to bounce funny ways. I mean, it's on purpose, everybody. They want weird things to happen. And weird things happen. And so, you know, knowing that's out of your control, you're not out there calling plays, you're not making tackles, you're not blocking for anybody, you're not throwing a pass, you're not catching a pass, you're a passenger, right? So control what you can control that, those things that you can control to the best of your ability and the ways that satisfy you, and the rest of it will all come around to you.
Yeah, it's the Serenity Prayer, right? I mean, I became familiar with the Serenity Prayer through my father going to Gamblers Anonymous meetings with him when I was like a teenager, and he wanted to, you know, introduce me to like accountability and things like that. And the Serenity Prayer, you know, change things you can, accept the things you can't and have the wisdom to know the difference. And Bob, it's almost like when you get to Earth, like that should be the little card they give you as a human navigating the human condition, you know? And I think it absolutely carries on more resonance the older you get. I always like to say now when people say, how are you doing? I'll say, well, everything under my control is going pretty well.
Yes.
The other stuff, we'll see. But the Serenity Prayer, absolutely. Winding things up, bringing all these things back together. I know I've asked you before about how fantasy football and the fantasy football world has changed, and what you appreciate. And you had very kind words to say about the quality of people. What did Groucho Marx say? I wouldn't be in any club that would have me as a member, right? Well, you're one of the founders of this club, and it's good that you like the members. But is there anything in the maybe in the future of fantasy football, or things that are coming on the horizon, or changes, things afoot that get you excited, or just some way that things have changed that is engaging you? I mean, I know you're getting a chance to like rub elbows with different people, travel and be at different events. As fantasy football has become more glamorous, and so much as it's glamorous, you're one of the people there as it's reaching out to all these worlds.
So it's funny because, you know, for thinking it's all glamorous, you go to some of the leagues that I get to cover and, you know, with big stars things. And what you find out is they're no different, right?
Yeah,
It's the same exact thing. And this is something that I wrote an article about the history of the game with Bill Winkenbaugh and that group, the GOPL, the Greater Oakland Pigskins Prognosticator League, the first league documented. And I have all the documentation on it. And I had all their paperwork and all the things, you know, for the people who played in that league and interviewed all the surviving people who were still, you know, around to talk to. And the thing that really stood out to me when I talked to all those people and I looked at all those things is they were just like us. Mm-hmm. And as we go forward, I see the same thing as I look in this world. Michael Bublé is as competitive, crazed, trading wheeler dealer as anyone you'll ever run across. And all these, you know, whatever they are in their real world, we're all the same once we get into the pit. You know, a fantasy football, and everyone's and like they act like that. They don't act. Nobody acts better than anybody. And I think that's the thing that, you know, when you mentioned, you know, what's changed over the course of years, I think the thing that's changed the most for me is not everybody feels like they have to be the league lawyer. Right. It feels like to me.
right.
Like early in the fantasy football, especially in the 90s, if you're out there in the news groups, you know, battling away, which is kind of the primordial sludge that the current internet thing rose out of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every other guy was the lawyer, and you know, they had to, you know, make everything miserable. All due respect to lawyers, who I'm sure they have a great.
I'm a dormant lawyer.
Right? Yeah, I know you are. But I mean, that seems to have gone away. Like there, you know, look, we've just learned over time that you set good rules and it's really easy and there's no wiggle room. It's all defined. And maybe part of that is the, you know, the rise of the commissioner softwares that allow, you know, there is no screw ups in scoring change discrepancies or lineups have to be in a certain time. You're not like the timestamp on the message machine doesn't leave room for somebody to say, oh, you didn't call then, you know, all those things. But it just seems like it's become a more pleasant experience in general. And maybe that's just because we're not all in the same room. I don't know. But it just seems like I think people are taking it a little easier, and that goes all the way up to the, you know, the superstar celebrities that are having their leagues. They are exactly just take my word for it. The league, you know, the chats, the email chains, they're exactly the same as everyone else's. And in some of the big leagues playing with some of the, you know, the great fantasy minds going right now, I'm in some leagues with, you know, as you are as well, we're in those leagues, and they're just like every other league you're in. Everyone's, you know, talking the same things and working the same kind of trades and doing all the same things. So I think that's the fun of all this, is it's kind of a great leveler.
Yeah, it's a redeeming quality of fantasy football that we can find. Isn't that what we need in America today, is find what we all have in common? And the world has enough strife. So when we're in our fantasy football league, that's supposed to be a good place and not a place where we bring all of our arguments and all of our desire to find controversy. And the last thing I'll say, because it struck me as you're talking about this, the great equalizer, Bob, you know, the saying you would hear, oh, we all put our pants on one leg at a time.
Well, I don't.
Right? What's the fantasy football version of that? We all draft our teams one player at a time, or we all set our lineups one running back at a time, or something like that. But it is uplifting in a way that fantasy football can get us back to that level where whatever differences we have outside of fantasy football, we enjoy it. We enjoy the time we get to spend together here with everybody on the couch with all of you because you're so indulgent to us. So
glad. Get a record player, start a record collection because it's the ritual. It's marrying music back to ritual. And whenever you take your record out and you handle it very gently because it's a precious thing, and you put it on the record and the sound of the needle going on the record, we all know what that means, how that prompts you, your whole life to remember it. And it's a moment in your life when you slow down and you make yourself ready to receive something.
I'm not like these other dads. They're weak, like your husband, I'm sure.
I'm single, so...
How's it going?
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.